Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time Democratic convention watcher.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that came of age on the cusp of the 21st century, a time when Mary Pat and I were still in the prime of our respective careers, and Nathan was, at least metaphorically, still wearing short pants. Though even then he was likely to deliver lectures on the different cinematic styles of, say, François Truffaut and Jean-Luc Godard. Anyway, coming of age is the theme this week as we tackle two small films, small at least in terms of the effect they're having on the box office. The first is Kneecap, a riotous look at a rap group from Northern Ireland, and the second is Dee Dee, which explores the problematic life of a Taiwanese-American teen who, in the year 2008, is just about to enter high school. Let's begin with a film that requires subtitles because much of what the characters speak is rendered in Irish Gaelic. Based on the formation, early struggles, and ultimate rise in popularity of the real-life Belfast Northern Ireland rap group Kneecap, British-Irish journalist-turned-filmmaker Rich Papiat has crafted a film that is equal parts Monty Python mockumentary and ever more provocative clone of A Hard Day's Night. The actual members of the rap trio, and I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce their real names, play a version of themselves, two at-loose teenagers who team up with a high school music teacher to form a group that raps both about drugs and rebellion. The rebellious part is their insistence on performing in Gaelic, which is why so much of the film requires subtitles. But despite the seriousness of its subjects, the enduring feel of the violence that the Troubles caused, in particular in Belfast, and the battle to save a dying language, Kneecap the film is marked by a rousing feel that is as humorous and enervating as it is topical. Oh, and Michael Fassbender co-stars as one of the band members' father. What's not to like?
It's funny that you brought up A Hard Day's Night and Monty Python. Those didn't cross my mind at all while I was watching Kneecap. I was thinking of
The Commitments.
The Commitments is a big one, yes. But I was also thinking of Trainspotting. I mean, this definitely owes a fair debt to that movie. I mean, there's even a moment
where
a character has their drugs end up in a garbage receptacle and they have to climb into the garbage receptacle to get it. And I thought, well, that's, I guess, a step up from, you know,
climbing
the dirtiest
into a toilet.
In Scotland or whatever that was. I was also thinking of all of the films of John Carney, the director who made movies like Once and Sing Street, films that are about musicians finding their voices and have kind of this scrappy goodness about them. And then also, I think in terms of the style of this movie, which I want to really get into, I was thinking of Edgar Wright, particularly movies like Scott Pilgrim versus the World and Hot Fuzz, where you have these almost comic book whip pans and smash zooms and their animated flourishes on the screen in Kneecap, which are, I think, trying to capture the doodles and the notebooks that these guys write all of their lyrics in. And also, like John Carney's films, there's a certain kind of disbelief that you sort of have to go into the theater with, because these guys as musicians are pretty much polished right away. Like, they're already packaged and ready to go the first time they step behind the mics. And that certainly beggars belief a little bit, but you just got to roll with it. Then at the end of the film, when it was going through the credits and I saw that these three guys, and by the way, I was stunned that these were not actors.
Could you believe that?
They're incredible. Like, these are first time performers and they feel like real movie stars. These are three really good
performances. Especially the teacher.
Yeah. I mean, I thought maybe one of them would be, you know, a ringer. But no, the three guys, they also have story credits. And so then I started to think, okay, I think I know what they were doing here. They were kind of doing what the Beatles were doing in the 60s, which is, what kind of movie can we put these guys in as a vehicle? And so they're in kind of a traditional, the band gets together and finds their voice kind of movie. But it's also, you know, kind of one of those classic working class kitchen sink British films that we were getting a lot of in the 90s, something like The Full Monty. There's a lot of that in this movie. But then at times it also becomes like almost an action thriller at the end. And so I thought, I think that's what they're doing here, is they thought, how much fun could we have making a movie? They probably thought, this is our only shot to make one, so might as well have a good time. And so, yeah, I really liked this too. I mean, it has such an infectious spirit about it, even though it's also dealing with genuinely serious political issues. There's a lot going on in this movie. But yeah, I had a really good time with Kneecap, and I think this is kind of one of those sleepers. It's kind of already fading away from memory, and I hope that people find it because it's really entertaining.
And I think that Kneecap could appeal to various age groups for a variety of different reasons, because of the political part, because of the family and relationship part, because of, you know, the music. And I agree with you, Nathan. I mean, I was shocked when I learned that these were the real members of the band, especially. So these two guys are like sort of fooling around and, you know, just hanging out and so forth. And then they hook up with this music teacher who's teaching in a school setting. And he realizes that he can't really reveal his identity because, you know, there are some image management concerns that you have when you're a teacher. And so he has to wear Irish
a balaclava.
Right, mm-hmm. to sort of hide his identity. And even his wife isn't sure what's going on at first. And so I don't know how much of that was true, but it was effective in
I'm
the movie.
I'm going to guess it wasn't
Zero?
Very true. Because
right.
There's also another plot point in the middle of Kneecap that involves the secret identity of another character. And both of those kind of felt like movie inventions.
Right, right. Yeah. So I think that you nailed it when you talked about Kneecap sort of doing multiple things here. And so they extrapolated from, you know, this one relatively simple idea, managed to have great performances. I don't know how he did that out of these first-time actors. And I also like the fact that a lot of movies that we see about Belfast, you know, it has these long tracking shots of like the shipyard and the Titanic Museum and all of this stuff. And this really felt authentic. Kneecap was filmed in the neighborhoods in these sort of dive bars. And there's only one sort of out on the streets attempt when these activists are trying to get the Irish language recognized in Northern Ireland as an official language. And that all that stuff is true. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot to like about this film.
I think all three of us agree that this is a really an entertaining movie and it's really well made and the performances are really good. I need to point out for those people who are sensitive to language is that there is a lot of profanity in this movie. Much of it is in Gaelic, and there's a lot of drug dealing, drug usage. So, I mean, you know, if you're sensitive to those things, know that before you go into Kneecap.
It would be wild if they made a movie about an Irish hip hop group that didn't have those things in it. If it was like a PG-13 movie.
Precisely. You know? The other big thing that we haven't really talked about is the Catholic Protestant breakdown, which is dealt with in the movie. As a matter of fact, it doesn't become the end all be all of the movie. People who are from Northern Ireland or who live in Belfast, they're going to be much more akin to what's going on there. But the group itself is a Protestant group. The rappers, all three of them. And usually when we see movies coming out of Belfast, it's usually about the Catholics, which they're called in this movie, the Fenians, you know.
Well, what about the whole plot point about the radical Republicans against drugs?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure that I was totally down with what they were trying to do there, but it was sort of funny, like in a Monty Python kind of way.
Yeah, I'm totally dumb about any of this stuff.
Well, and the other thing was, I didn't really understand, like, the police captain woman. You know, I couldn't really figure out what role she was playing. But in the overall scheme of things, it didn't matter. But one of my favorite things that happened, and I think if I remember, I mean, this was such typical Irish humor because somebody brought up the potato famine or whatever, and they made a joke about it somehow, and then nobody says anything, and then the guy goes, too soon.
It's 1847.
So it did have some of those touches that I really liked.
Yeah, and I also just like the fact that even though Kneecap is about the titular band, you have all of these supporting characters that I think bring a certain amount of richness to the overall movie. I mean, it's not like they're deep characters in any way, but we learn about them and we also kind of understand where they're coming from, both culturally and politically, because you have the teacher character's wife who has become the representative for, you know, advocating for the Irish language to be kept in schools and to still be an official language of the country. You've got the mother who's still kind of waiting for Michael Fassbender was this IRA bomber at a certain point.
No one knows if he's alive or dead,
and we find out what's going on with him, but she's been waiting for him to potentially come home for 10 years and hasn't really left the house. But then at a certain point, she becomes radicalized and does have to go out and spread the news about her son's band. And so there are all these
right.
people on
well,
the fringes of
the story.
Well,
and I have to take back something I said, because I said that the teacher who gets involved in this project was a music teacher. And actually, he's a teacher of the Irish language. And he's a sort of
but
a
he is
music
a musician. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, music yeah. aficionado.
Well, and
on
he
the
becomes
side.
Their,
right.
their interpreter when yeah. you know they get called into the police interrogation room. That's yeah. a, that's a funny scene.
The other thing about this movie, Kneecap, is that you know it deals with the whole issue of cultural appropriation.
Yeah.
But if ever there was a group of people who can jump on the black-oriented hip-hop as it came about in the 90s with credentials, it's the people in Northern Ireland.
And of course, the reason that this music always strikes a chord for people that are both fans of it and are against it is it's because the music that they're making is more honest about the history and political
Correct.
Climate of the country, and it's in a way that the establishment does not like and wants to stop. And that's also what this movie is about. And I gotta say, I didn't know anything about their music going in, but they've got some catchy songs too, even if I couldn't understand
absolutely.
The lyrics without the subtitles.
Absolutely.
You know?
At any rate, that was our discussion of Kneecap. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcast of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss Dee Dee. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I talked about the film Kneecap. Let's now turn to something American, though it involves a boy with Asian roots battling a virtual dictionary of problems associated with teen angst. Following in the style of such films as Eighth Grade and Mid-90s, Dee Dee explores the life of a young Taiwanese-American boy named Chris. Wang Wang to his pals, Dee Dee, which in Cantonese means little brother, to his family, as he attempts to navigate his way through, in 2008, the often troublesome early years of adolescence. In Chris's case, that means fighting with his older sister, resenting the overbearing attitudes of his mother and grandmother, putting up with the casually irritating behavior of his so-called friends, all while trying to find a way through the once popular social media website MySpace simply to fit in. At first, Dee Dee seemed headed in a feel-good direction, but as Chris stumbles his way through one clumsy situation after the next, it becomes clear that writer-director Sean Wang has something more serious in mind, in effect, capturing some of his own confusing, painful experiences. Look for some good performances by Isaac Wang as Chris and Joan Chin as his mom, whose own backstory reflects the regrets of a life marked by unfulfilled dreams.
A lot of the coming-of-age movies that maybe we've seen in the recent past have focused on a girl's perspective about what that means or what that looks like. And so, you know, you had mentioned Eighth Grade in particular. Mm-hmm. And I think when we look at this from a boy's perspective, I mean, I'm thinking of the more comedic approaches to deal with this topic, such as Superbad.
Superbad,
and
yeah.
that's not what is happening in this particular film.
And they watch Superbad in this movie.
That is mm-hmm. interesting,
yeah.
yes.
Yeah.
But I was a little reluctant to see it because I thought, oh, do I want to see another coming-of-age film? And then I realized, hey, we've got grandchildren that age. Maybe it'll be insightful in some way. But Dee Dee really is deeper because we don't see our protagonist, Chris, succeed. As a matter of fact, most of the time, he falls flat, and sometimes literally, when he's attempting to skateboard and the like. And he's really trying to navigate his way through these different scenarios. Friendships, his first fumbling attempts at, you know, securing a girlfriend. His relationship with his older sister, which is, you know, one of those classic kind of older sister, younger brother, finger pointing. But then, of course, when Chris needs her, she's there. And so we see that. And it was nice to see Joan Chen in a completely different role.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, you had mentioned that the director sort of went into this because it is semi-autobiographical, apparently. And so it is dealing with larger issues of these relationships. It's also dealing with the whole issue of race and ethnicity and what the expectations might be. And the fact that the real grandma was in it was
yes.
really pretty funny because
Sean Wang's real grandmother.
Yes,
yeah.
the director's real grandmother. So I thought that that was a nice touch as well. So not your typical coming-of-age movie, although it has some of the features of that. And in the end, I really appreciated this portrayal a lot.
Well, and we should say that the grandmother was also in Sean Wang's short film, Nai Nai and Wai Po.
Oh, the one that was nominated for
an Academy Award.
Yeah.
And it's just about his two grandmothers, his maternal and paternal grandmothers, who have moved in together and live together in their old age. And it's just kind of this fly-on-the-wall portrait of these two women in his life. And so, yeah, it was good to see her show up again, but in a somewhat fictionalized performance, I would imagine. But yeah, I was watching Dee Dee and thinking, oh, I've passed what I like to call the American Graffiti Rubicon, which is that my adolescence is now fair game for period pieces.
Yes.
Because, you know, this movie is set in 2008. I'm a little bit older than Sean Wang, so I wasn't, you know, going into high school at that time. But I definitely recognized all of the signposts that make that time that time. I mean, the specificity of this, I think, is what makes it effective. Not just the cultural specificity about these people, but about the time and place, because it's set in the Bay Area, you know, in the mid-2000s. And just, you know, the MySpace communications that happen. Mm-hmm. There are long scenes where the characters talk to each other through AOL Instant Messenger and look
and
at each other's MySpaces. And it also zeroes in on a thing that is a distinctly millennial concern, which is, do my friends have me in their MySpace top 8? There's a whole, like, it's almost a plot point in this movie. It's like, I'm not in my friends' top 8 anymore.
He kept checking.
And so I always love when a movie can take me back to something like that. But even if it's not something that I specifically went through, it's like you just feel like this is something that really happened to this writer and he's now communicating it through this movie. And so I thought that was what was really special about Dee Dee. I mean, it hits all of the kind of coming of age narrative things that you expect.
And it was the coming of age story of the internet and
social media.
So I think that that's what also distinguishes it, because now kids are living their lives completely differently as a result of social media.
It was more of a novelty.
Media.
And like YouTube is a brand new thing in this movie. I also thought that Past Lives from last year was another movie that was about how technology changes the ways that we communicate with one another. But I also appreciated that Dee Dee himself, I think, like the great coming-of-age characters, is hard to like sometimes.
Yeah.
And he has the wherewithal to know that. He understands why his friends don't want to hang out with him anymore. He says weird things sometimes, inappropriate things at times. He can't read
He told the story when they're
about
out
the
with these two girls. And it was just, and his friend is trying to get him to stop it, and he just keeps on going, and
I liked that about the character, that he doesn't feel like a sitcom character. It feels like a real kid with real problems and real hangups. And I liked that about it.
Yeah, and it's a serious film, but it doesn't go in a direction that's overly serious.
But it doesn't go in too much in the other direction either.
Yeah. It, in fact, the way this movie ends for me is a perfect ending.
Yeah.
It's open-ended. It can go in any direction, but there are signs that this kid's going to be okay. There are signs that you're going through a rough patch here, pal, but you know, maybe dad will come back. Maybe dad is never going to come back. And maybe that'll
really
make a difference.
We don't really know much about dad.
We don't know. Absolutely.
I wasn't even sure he really existed, quite frankly.
I was pretty sure he existed because somebody's paying for that house.
Well, and I
even in
go,
2008, it wasn't easy to live in Fremont.
I want to go back to Joan Chen because I also think one of the hallmarks of a really good coming-of-age movie or teenage movie is that it extends empathy and humanity to the adults. If the adults are in the picture at all, I think that's what makes it special. You know, you think about something like Lady Bird or The Edge of 17 with Woody Harrelson as that teacher that really understands what this kid is going through. And I thought that the way that Joan Chen's character as this mother, I thought was really richly observed.
Yep.
The way that she is trying to navigate this household as a single parent, but also
her mother-in-law
is constantly saying, you're not good enough. You're the reason this household is falling apart. But you're like, I don't know. It looks like a pretty normal single parent household to us, right? But she's holding her to this possibly impossible standard. And then she's also trying to connect with this kid who, you know, he's like 13. He's at that point where he's starting to push away.
And he's living in this all-female household.
That too. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to figure out, you know, what friend group do I want to be with? And he's enchanted by this girl. And I also thought the relationship with the girl that's the object of his affection did not go in the direction I expected at all and felt so believable. I don't know if I've seen that kind of emotional vulnerability in a guy and a girl, you know, are on a date for the first time, and it goes in the way that this movie takes it. And so I thought Joan Chen, it was really good to see her. Well, I, of course, know her best as Josie Packard from Twin Peaks.
Of course,
and I feel like she hasn't been on screens
enough. No, she hasn't. And I was looking at some of her filmography, and you're right. I mean, back in the day, she was much more of a frequent presence. So I hope—
In American films,
right,
at least.
Correct. Yeah. I hope she does come back. The other thing is, I mean, she's going through her own travails because, yes, you know, she is an artist, but she's been frustrated commercially. And yeah, we see a couple of things that are really kind of touching and sad,
yeah,
that, you know, happen along the way. And the older sister was perfect, yeah, I thought, you know, because she's at that point. She's about ready to go away to college. And it's during that summer while she's trying to push away and pull back with her family at the mm-hmm same time. Yeah. And I thought that Chan Wang did a really nice job of portraying that.
Yeah, there was another moment involving Joan Chen in which things go completely the opposite of the way you think they're going to go. And that involves the skateboarders who are in the room,
yeah,
with Chris. And they appreciate, they go, hey, did you paint that? That's really good. And you can see her just light up. And of course, then Chris, as you pointed out,
ruins it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Ruins
and then,
the moment.
And
well,
then they go to him,
in the way,
hey, don't disrespect your mom that
right
way. And it's like, when was that ever in a coming-of-age film?
And it also just goes to show you that when you're that age, you're so impressionable and you're trying to imitate the things you see around you. That's what's cool. That's what's,
yep,
not cool.
Yep.
And most of the time, you're wrong. And I liked seeing this kid just kind of hit one hurdle after another, because that's sometimes how adolescence feels.
Well,
you know?
And so Dan was talking about the ending of the movie that we don't really have to reveal, but they do go back to school. And that felt really realistic too, because, you know, sometimes when you would come back to school after summer vacation, you know, you could start anew or reconnect. And, you know, it just seemed like that is what would have happened.
And yeah, it is something new because it's high school,
right,
now.
Yeah.
He's gone out of middle school. He's in high school. So,
and we obviously know that Dee Dee is going to be fine because he grew up to be an Academy Award nominated filmmaker.
Yeah.
At least, you know,
yeah,
a certain version of yeah him. So yeah, this
yeah
is another kind of sleeper movie that I think people should find.
And that was our discussion of the film Dee Dee. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And early in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Kneecap. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the late novelist Ursula K. Le Guin. There's a point around the age of 20 when you have to choose whether to be like everybody else the rest of your life or to make a virtue of your peculiarities. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.